Today's guest on Medio Scientific's The Business of Lorwyn is Telemaco Milia, Vice President and General Manager of EchoStar Mobile and a board member of the LoRa Alliance. Telemaco has spent the last 4 years pushing the boundaries of satellite-enabled LoRaWAN, leading the development of EchoStar's pan-European LoRaWAN IoT network using geostationary satellites. Under his leadership, EchoStar Mobile has deployed real-time, bidirectional connectivity over satellite, enabling LoRaWAN devices to operate in remote areas where terrestrial networks don't reach. In this conversation, we cover the business case for satellite LoRaWAN, how customers are using it to close critical coverage gaps, and what it actually takes to make a device work reliably in space. We get into resilience, latency, packet delivery, guarantees, dual-mode hardware, and why licensing spectrum in the S-band makes a difference. We also touch on what's coming, expanded coverage into the U.S., the future of hybrid terrestrial satellite connectivity, and how the LoRaWAN ecosystem is evolving to support truly global deployments. This episode is sponsored by the Helium Foundation's IoT Working Group. Helium offers global LoRaWAN coverage and is used by everyone from hobbyists to businesses deploying countrywide networks. If you'd like to see if Helium coverage exists near you, check out the links in the show notes. To get started using Helium today, you can sign up for a console account with Medio Scientific at console.medioscientific.com. Now, let's dig into the conversation with Telemaco Milia. Right on, Telemaco. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
You're welcome. Pleasure.
I'm psyched to have you on. I think the big thing here is that watching your career, looking back over your career, you've had this ability to take really cutting edge stuff and then bring it to market to make sure that people got to use it. You've been in the business a long time. Let's start with, what are the fundamentals of satellite and LoRaWAN that you're super pumped about?
When we started trying to understand what we could do with satellite and IoT, we had to figure out how to do it in a cost efficient and standard way. And when we started almost 4 years ago, we didn't have much available other than some cool technology like LoRa and chipset available, but without the real understanding if that would work or not. So we really tested and say, okay, let's see if these things have legs. On paper they do, but you know, when you put that in the field, you never know. And we tried and it did work out of the shelf. So without really much intervention on the chipset and with very reasonable budget for the setting up of the network, we got the service live. So I think this was pretty exciting because several stars aligned without even we knew it in advance. Because when the satellite was launched back in 2017, nobody could have imagined that this satellite would run this waveform today. Okay. Or nobody would have imagined that this chipset built by Semtech a few years back would have been enabling satellite connectivity off the shelf. So there were several things that were unexpected and that did work properly from day one. So this is, I think, was one of the most exciting findings that we got. And that's why moving forward was easy, because these things were available. But nobody had been engineering these capabilities from day one for this specific purpose.
Got it. Okay, so the surprising piece was basically that it worked, because hardware is usually pretty hard. Okay, well, let's go straight into it. I mean, this is the business of LoRaWAN. What does the ROI look like on satellite devices when you're selling to a customer? Is ROI what you're focusing on? Is it something else?
What we do is we sell connectivity to people like device manufacturers, OEM, system integrators, that they do have the notion of the application end-to-end, and they come to us because they have a connectivity gap. Often what happens is they do have terrestrial network availability, but then there are spots where network is not available. Deploying private gateways or private solutions would be too expensive, and there are no public networks. So satellite at that point in time becomes the only logical way to efficiently address, you know, connectivity for a population of the total fleet, which is not big, but is critical to get to 100%. Okay. So that's where we come into play, and we don't set ourselves as direct competitors to other people deploying terrestrial networks. We set up ourselves as complementary solutions to people that already have deployed terrestrial networks. That's why the technology that we built is dual mode, so it can use both terrestrial networks as well as satellite. And this is where it becomes very handy, because then people used to terrestrial connectivity, they can add satellite very easy.
Got it. So your typical customer
already understands LoRaWAN. They've already got a fleet of devices deployed. They probably have gateways out there, and they come to you because they have gaps. You're not seeing customers who are like, hey, I heard about this satellite and LoRaWAN thing. Let's start with you.
There are a few of them also that are not really into the technology. And there is a large population that, you know, generally that they even don't know satellite. Okay. So they even don't know that it would be possible to use this low power protocol over satellite. Often the first reaction was, no, it cannot work. I don't believe you. Okay. we saw that a few times already. So, yes, there are also personalities that have no idea that that is existing, actually. So it's a mix. But yes, the number of people that were already into the LoRaWAN ecosystem and have been picking up satellite very easily is probably today 60-70% of the partners we're working with.
Okay. And I got a couple listener questions came in. One of them was with the ongoing disruption of worldwide GPS due to the Ukraine war. How stable is the tech right now? They're seeing that there's some issues with that. What are you seeing?
Semtech did build a very interesting modulation, which is called, that does frequency hopping, what they call LoRaFHSS. So it's a frequency hopping solution that essentially splits the, you know, available channel in smaller channels. And then they put a bit of information on different channels, and then it is reconstructed at the very end of the, you know, reception chain. That has the advantage of reducing a lot the packet error rate, therefore possibility to lose packets, but it is also resilient from jamming on interference standpoint. Of course, if you come with a large jammer and you jam the full band, everybody will be done. I mean, independently of the technology that you use. But literally the use of the AVHSS, because they are using very small channels with high energy, then this gives a lot of resilience. So yes, in that respect, there is some advantage in doing that type of approach.
Got it. And this is you said LRFHSS, long range frequency hopping spread spectrum, I think it is?
Correct.
Yep. Okay. And then the other one is, what's the current coverage and service like? I know I'd seen a bunch of stuff on European coverage. One of the folks who wrote in said that they talked to you guys a while ago, but there's just a short window, maybe 2 hours a day for their devices to connect. Has that changed? I think that was a couple of years ago. Or is this kind of 24-hour worldwide service? What does it look like?
No, for us, for EchoStar Mobile, which is the entity in Europe managing the S-band spectrum, which is the MSS spectrum allocated for us, you know, for mobile satellite services, is managed geostationary satellite. It means that it's up in the sky, you know, at the equator, always in the same position. Therefore, it provides 24/7 connectivity, real-time and bidirectional, okay? So there is a single satellite, but there is no waiting time for receiving or sending data. That's the same thing that we can offer in US. We recently, you know, got the approval also to offer services in US. So that will be exactly the same SKU that will be able to, you know, to serve customers on the other side of the ocean as well. It's still a geostationary satellite, so also bidirectional and 24/7.
And this, I mean, a geostationary satellite is a long way away. So there's going to be some latency here. Walk me through some of the stuff that you'll tell a customer before they come on, just to set the expectation like, hey, this is not a thing where you have got, you know, you've got a gateway right next to a sensor and there's no latency issues other than what is inherent in LoRaWAN. Yeah, what should a customer expect?
So what we tell the customer is, look, you will be able to get your connection, your data in less than a second. And then the only way that we convince you is that you test it and you see it yourself. So what we measure today is that in less than a second, the data leaves the sensor and is actually displayed in the dashboard. The satellite is 36,000 kilometers away from the Earth. Usually communications that use IP mobility, like the beagle terminals, they do have 700 milliseconds round trip time, which is more or less the same latency that you would expect from an edge GPRS connection.
Sure.
So, you know, packet flies, get on the other side, it is treated, demodulated, and then displayed, all in all, less than a second, which, you know, for real-time communication, like critical infrastructure, these type of applications, it is, you know, well in what people would expect to see.
Yeah, yeah, within a second is pretty good. And how reliable is that? I mean, it is traveling a long distance. There's a bunch of stuff in the way. There might be some solar disruption stuff? Like, what are we looking at with satellite versus terrestrial reliability of service?
Don't forget that you're using licensed spectrum in the S-band. Therefore, we can guarantee availability of the network. There is no interference coming from out-of-band interference. And then also we manage interference within the band. So the packet error rate is very low. Therefore, we can guarantee a certain level of QoS. There's always a best effort for network, but we can guarantee, we do have strategies to guarantee, packet.
Oh, interesting. And then what parts of the world aren't covered? It sounds like you've got the US and Europe, so I'm imagining you've got the Atlantic between them as well. What parts, if a customer comes to you and says, hey, I've got a device here, where you say like, hey, we're just not there yet?
Well, interestingly enough, we got requests for similar services in South America, Africa, Middle East, and South Asia. We constantly got requests. Unfortunately, we don't have coverage there yet. We're working on that one. As you remember in my talk during the IoT World Solution Congress, you know, my point was that today having a single provider giving you connectivity worldwide is a hard ask. Therefore, at this point in time, only partnership will be able to provide that coverage. But it's also true that if you look at region one, which is Europe, and region two, which is US, today you are probably talking about 50% of the overall IoT market, which is already a big part of the cake. Obviously, being able to cover, regions like South America will even give you an extended reach, because there are a lot of use cases like cattle tracking that, represent a lot of revenues, because they need to trace the animals from the birth to when they need to be sold on the market for their meat. And if you don't track the animals there, you cannot go to the high value market. So there are places where having this type of connectivity would be a real game changer. It will get there, just a matter of time.
Got it. And what does it look like to throw another satellite up? Is that's a couple million bucks? I don't think it's no longer like 90 million, but it's probably not, 10,000.
Well, these figures are highly depends on how big is the satellite, how many satellites you're launching, who is the launcher, and in any case are confidential data. But yeah, launching a satellite is several millions of dollars. And then building satellites it depends if you're building small size satellites or larger satellites. So you're talking anyway, businesses that to make constellations, you are in the multi-billion dollars.
Yeah.
So it's a very expensive business to be on. And that's why today you see obviously Starlink, which is a great advantage compared to competition. Amazon is coming on board. Eutelsat OneWeb is there, but it's not every day that somebody wakes up and say, hey, I have budget, let's launch a new constellation.
Yeah. We're not slinging them off the roof quite yet.
You see a lot of, startups launching a few satellites, one, two, three, 10 satellites and doing, there is a lot of R&D of government-funded projects, but to make this a real business behind, you need more than that.
So then the next piece is, how easy is it to switch between networks? As we've got this satellite piece, this S-band that's licensed, and you've got the kind of regular LoRaWAN that's unlicensed. Is that a really difficult thing? Is there a ton of stuff that a new customer coming on board has to do? Or is that something that you guys handle internally? Walk me through the process.
So the goal for us was to make it easy to get adopted. So today we are able to hide both the fact that you are using LoRa technology and the fact you're using satellite. Potentially the device maker only knows the AT commands to code the application in the device. And then the MQTT JSON format to get the data out of the platform, okay? That's all somebody needs to know to actually get going. Then obviously there is more around the integration of the device, availability of the antennas, positioning of the device, how the device is used in the real-life use case. That's why we put a lot of emphasis in letting people test, because it's not granted that the device will work in the live environment, okay? But this, unfortunately, is not only us, is the price that you need to pay to get to your satellite, okay? So fortunately, there are more and more people building antennas that are suitable for the IoT. So you don't need a big dish antenna. You just need a much more compact antennas that are not so expensive. But still, the radio propagation, analysis, how the device is built, where do we place the antenna, how is the enclosure done, what is the playing ground for the antenna, the mechanical design, batteries, solar panels, all of that plays a role, but this is true for any device maker. So these are the complexities that we see today. And having skilled people helping device manufacturing in that respect is very useful. But this is where you have the power of the LoRaWAN ecosystem, because you have a very active and energized ecosystem where there are a lot of people building devices with many different technologies like solar panels, batteries, enclosures. All of that is very handy when you have an ecosystem that is producing a lot of different sensors.
Yeah. Yeah, it is cool. Every new trade show has got some new stuff, whether it's indoor energy harvesting, which is probably not as applicable to satellite devices, or it's just offering a new ability there.
When you are outdoor, energy harvesting becomes important because then you may reduce the need of a battery, and that means longer lifetime. So yes, no, energy harvesting is definitely one of the big asks here. I know there are people that want to make energy harvesting friendly protocol, meaning you transmit based on the energy that you have. Satellite is a bit more complex environment, but definitely something that is very interesting because the satellite device is anyway always outdoor.
Got it.
You need to see the sun.
I mean, you got to match the solution to the problem. Okay, I think we'll wrap up here with, is there anything that you're looking down the pipe in the next year or two that you're really excited about that may not have hit the market yet, but that's coming and you can see it pretty clearly?
Today, we do have satellite IoT services, you know, small sensors that do transmit data every now and then. There are a lot of activities going on anything that is non-terrestrial networks like 3GPP, working on connecting smartphones, satellites. Whether this is useful yet, it has to be proven, especially, you know, in the context where things are changing and you are in transition period. But clearly, in the long run, having a single modem or chipset that can do terrestrial and satellite and switch between the networks depending on availability, application, services, that is a dream becoming true. And this is where we will see a lot of changes, a lot of new activities, because then the terrestrial operators will need to cope with the satellite operators, and then this will create a lot of new dynamics that today don't exist. Even us as users, we have given the opportunity to to use the device in a way that probably today we're not even imagining. That's why I'm really curious to, you know, to understand where the market is going, because there are a lot of projections and, you know, so many billions connections. But at the end of the day, you need to understand how really people will use it. And today, no, I think nobody really knows how things will evolve. That's where it becomes interesting, right?
Yeah, I love that you're pushing into the unknown there and figuring out what's going on with cutting edge technology. It's nice way to wrap this up. Telemaco, thanks so much for making the time to come on. I know you're super busy. I appreciate you sharing a little bit about satellite LoRaWAN with us.
You're welcome, and do visit techrestaurantmobile.com to learn more.
Right on. That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. I built this for you. So whether you're a business owner, a LoRaWAN professional, or a hobbyist, the intent is to give you great LoRaWAN information. Of course, the best information doesn't come from me. It comes from the conversations we have with the people building and deploying this tech in the real world. And that's where you come in. LoRaWAN is a global patchwork of talent and ideas. And ironically, for a globally connected network, most of the brilliant folks working on it aren't connected yet. Help me change that. Introduce me to someone awesome in your network, someone doing meaningful work in LoRaWAN, or just shoot me a name. I'll take it from there and get them on the show so we can share their work with the world. You can always find me at metsci.show, that's metsci.show, metsci.show. If you want to support the show in other ways, you can subscribe, leave a review, share it with your corner of the world. All of those are super helpful. If you'd like to support financially, you can go to support.metsci.show for both one-time and recurring options. We're also open to sponsors. If your company serves the LoRaWAN community and you want to reach this dedicated audience, let's talk. If you want to try LoRaWAN for yourself, create a Medio Scientific account at console.medioscientific.com and get your first 400 DC for free, which is enough to run a device sending hourly for about a year. This show is supported by a grant from the Helium Foundation and produced by Gristle King, Inc. I'm Nick Hawks. I'll see you on the next show.